Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 516. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Shahid. What is up, good sir?
Nothing much. Enjoying my evening and feeling good because a wise man proved my point that nostalgia is trash and overrated.
Yeah, it is weird how much of a draw nostalgia is. I guess I knew I was in for a trash show, so it probably didn't upset me nearly as much as it could have.
Yeah, it says a lot that the Hills basically pointing out how we're wasting our time with these old fossils sucking up the energy while we should be, you know, paying attention to new people. It's like, yeah, they got it. Like, Samoa Joe is full of the hill, but he's saying, because it's like, I could be out here having a match. Instead, we're wasting time with John Cena cracking corny ass jokes.
People love the entertainment, man. I don't know why they decided on that kind of a format. I guess John Cena coming out and doing that with the Usos at some point wouldn't be bad if it kind of broke up a show, but when that's just the many one skit in a long many of them, that wears you down quite a bit.
Yeah, it was just such a disconnect, like seeing John Cena, because it's like he don't feel like he belong anymore, and it hasn't been that long since he's like been wrestling. Like at least part time, but just seeing, like, you know, I'm used to John Cena like TV and movie star. Like I went to the movies and saw the preview for his Nickelodeon movie where he's a firefighter. Like that's the John Cena I'm used to with his ridiculous haircut. So seeing him with his bright green shirt and jorts, rapping and everything, like it's like the same feeling we got with DX when they came back and they're like middle aged men doing the same jokes. Like, what are you doing? You're an adult now, John Cena. Go be an adult.
Yeah, I am not all that proud to admit my wife stumbled upon Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader on Nickelodeon with John Cena, and that's the one that I'm picturing now. Yeah. Host of a Nickelodeon show. I still can't stop laughing at the irony that he works for a children's network yet does not want children.
That's probably, maybe that's the reason why he's seen too many of them up close.
that could be the case.
And it's also funny, like, you know, this TV PG area. I mean, you know, all ages, and they're making DUI jokes, and they're the baby faces, and that's getting a cheer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they've kind of had that dichotomy for a while. Like, I mean, really, even going back to, I would say that it really started with Becky Lynch snapping. I think they realized that kind of baby faces having a little bit of a hard edge to them helps out. And I think they were trying to do that for Cena in that instance, giving him that line.
Yeah, I don't mind the line Cena doing because it's like it's there. It's just funny where the Usos are heroes and they're kind of like laughing out like, yeah, I got arrested for drunk driving. What? I mean, I'm not a prude or nothing, but
yeah,
that seemed very, it stood out.
Hey.
It was very noticeable and it just seemed like weird.
Yeah, that part was a little, like, I mean, I know that they're supposed to be expressing that they were happy that John Cena was roasting them, but it's like, oof, man, there are a number of occasions that I am not completely sure how I got away with not getting that type of a ticket, and B, like, every time I think about it, I think about how stupid it was. You know, like there is no joking around with that one, but they did seem to have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, And I mean, it was just weird because I think the show just started off a weird thing with what constituted legends and why they were used. Where you have Rikishi with the Usos, which makes sense. Devon Dudley with the Revival. Why?
Yeah, I mean, they've shown, I guess that's the best they could do for a throwback tag team member. I mean, I don't think Arn, because Arn got fired a while ago, didn't he?
Yeah, that's this whole, let's get the lesser of the tag team night, because I see Devon without Bubba Ray. I see Christian without Edge. It's like, you know, it's like you had enough money to hire, you know, Tom or Jerry, so you just get Jerry instead of Tom.
Oh, I did always like Jerry a little bit more than Tom. But, I guess I always find it jarring now, I guess, thinking of quality of superstars. And I know it hops the whole way to the end of the show, but Steve Austin getting the top billing, I feel like the last two times that Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan were on, is definitely an interesting statement, I feel like, that's now been cemented in by the WWE about who's the king of the WWE, at least for now.
Yeah, and it's funny how they've done that, because for the longest time it was Hogan, and then it was HBK, then it was Flair, then Cena, and then, like, you know, Undertaker, and that. But it's always should have been Austin. Like, if it's gonna be one person, you know, and The Rock's not there, Stone Cold makes sense, and it's funny. Like, the last time he showed up, he didn't even talk. He just gave Vince a stunner. And that was in this weird, like, you know, the biggest star you ever had, one of the biggest, best people on the mic, and he doesn't say one word. And at least here, he got the talk, and to the point where they tried to cut his, you know, turn his music on and play him off the stage. Like, no, you're not going to stop Steve Austin from talking, especially when he has some beer in his system. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah, it kind of made for a little bit of an awkward ending if there hadn't already been some awkward parts prior to that. Yeah, so this show definitely was bookended by nostalgia that was a little bit cringy, to say the least.
Yeah, some were more cringy than others, like before that Hulk Hogan coming out. And all these fans, yeah, Hulk, you know, Hulkamania, blah blah blah, my hometown. And it's funny, I was watching it, just my face frowned up. And now I noticed in the back, and I noticed even more on Twitter today, I saw Booker T's face, and I saw Triple H's face, and they did not look pleased at all to be up there to hear any of his crap. Like, Triple H had his arms crossed, just mean mugging. Booker T had this disgusted look on his face. And the irony of those two sharing the same thought process, considering the history they had in the ring, and then thinking about Hulk Hogan, was just hilarious on many levels.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of complication going on there, and I did somehow sneak in seeing those pictures today. And there's no way that you can spin that if you ask them that question. And I don't know, it'd be kind of funny if Booker T addressed that on his podcast.
I mean, he did not, like, you know, Mark Henry was there smiling, most of the people was there like smiling looking. Those two did not look happy at all. And nothing about Triple H's, like, body presence, body language was like, I'm happy to hear this speech from this old-ass bigot.
Yeah. He's just like, this is not helping us out right now. That's all that's going through his head.
And just think about that's Triple H being like the elder statesman of reason, even though you're talking about cringeworthy segment. I know a lot of Twitter fans felt old when DX came out with Hall and Nash in the Road Dogg and X-Pac. And I'm like, yeah, Scott Hall was old before the Attitude Era started. And that was the 90s. I mean, that was 20 something years ago. It wasn't like he was 8. It wasn't like he was 18 back then when he was on Raw. He was already at wrestling for like a decade.
Yeah. I mean, I don't at this point I don't know what people expect. Like, Sean Waltman does actually look like he's in great shape currently. But everyone else is a little suspect, but Kevin Nash has trash knees, so what's he gonna do?
He old.
Yeah, he's old, and there's he that too.
Doesn't mind looking old. It's like old people look old, and we're just used to like everybody can't age like The Rock. I mean, it's just honest, like you know,
right?
You get to your 40s and your 50s, like you look at Scott Hall. Be happy that he's alive. There's people wondering, like you know, he wouldn't even be around. Like if you were watching late 90s, early 2000s. You just be open like 2019, he's not in a box. So seeing out there with that, even though that old ass jacket, him just look old, it's like, yeah, he's old. He's been through it. So I'm expecting him to come out here and give a razor's edge to Luke Gallows.
Oh, that would have been pretty funny to see. But yeah, I certainly would not expect that to happen either. I don't expect a jackknife out of Kevin Nash either, unless it's like to someone really small, Hornswoggle.
Yeah, but you know, you have that, you have the women, and it's just funny, like, you know, you had the usual women that were back, but then Eve Torres, who sometimes she's there, sometimes she's not, depending on like she's busy. Melina, who you hadn't seen since she left.
Yeah, that was pretty jarring, I've got to admit. Like, I was like, hold on a second, and I rewound it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is Melina.
Yeah, she actually had to do something. You know, Candice Michelle, who... It's funny, like, that we've talked about, like, that era between the Attitude, post-Attitude era, and right before the Divas Revolution, they sometimes they want to act like those women don't count.
But it's right. Like,
they were there. They did stuff. Y'all told me all the time Kelly was a big deal. I mean, she got a segment to get the 24/7 title, so they cared enough about her to do that. It's funny how that title's become so, how they've used that title, because it started off as a joke, and now it's just like, you know, Masterpiece Theater. Like, you can have it fit on anything. They were at Comic-Con fighting over that. They've had stuff on the plane. You have legend, you know, you get to have Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe fight over it, and have Kelly, Candice Michelle fight over it. And, you know, starts with R-Truth and Drake Maverick. It ends with R-Truth and Drake Maverick. Even if you get a detour with a lunge of Blaze, I don't know what she was on. I hope I'm never on it, because, yeah.
I had no idea. Like, I'm like, what's supposed to be happening here? And then I see Candice Michelle tapping, and I'm like, I am so confused right now. Like, it didn't look like a sleeper. It kind of looked like a terrible headlock to me.
Yeah, I'm like, what is this? Is she just going to hug her to death? And then this whole, when she first said, I'm not going to have the belt for long, so you better take it back. At first I thought, you know, because they were making it off like it was like a botch, like, she said it wrong, and even on the commentary they said that, and then she came out like, no, when I said I'm not going to have it wrong, it's the reason why, and she going to throw the belt in the trash like it was WCW.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those ones, it's just like, how many people are watching right now that got that callback?
Like us. Basically.
Yeah, I mean, that they definitely played that joke for a small segment of the viewing audience.
Yeah, and then Million Dollar Man comes out, does what he does best, buys the belt, and like, oh, Shane, you know, Shades of WrestleMania. How many people were alive? I know the raw age is like old, like the median age is what, probably like 40s or 50s. But still, if you're trying to get young fans, I'm like, if you're under the age of 20 and you're watching this, you have no idea why you should care about any of this.
Oh. Yeah. That's what I mean, I was trying to figure out if it was worth spreading out the nostalgia more than doing one giant reunion. But I'm not sure if it is or not.
Yeah, I mean, they did the best they could. Like, they tried to incorporate people in the storylines, which was, like, surprising. Having the heels crap all over it was definitely something. Because basically, like, Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe are saying, we're stupid for, this is the problem. We keep going back in the past instead of focus on the present. And the worst part is, they're not wrong. You know, like, how many times have I got to see the Million Dollar Man? Yes. Oh, it's ha 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 ha. Oh, it's Sergeant Slaughter. He's alive. I get to see him again. Seeing Rob Van Dam, and he probably was like high as a kite. And it's just weird because I'm like, didn't he just re-sign with Impact Wrestling? Last time I checked, and he's talking about how he gets to have his own schedule and yada yada yada, and he's enjoying being divorced and all this. And next time though, he's just there. Walling himself down the ring.
That one was probably the worst. Like, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash at least had street clothes on. Rob Van Dam in the unitard, the singlet, whatever you want to call it. Not really a good look at this age, you know? You gotta figure out some new, some wardrobe changes.
Yeah, it's funny, like, he doesn't seem old, but he doesn't look young. Like, that's an outfit that you can rock when you're young anymore. It's like, it was like Mickey, you know, Mickey Rourke and the Wrestler. Like, he dresses like it's the Rock and Roll Express, and it's the current era. Like, it just looks stupid. Like, he just looked sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, and not even sad where, like, Rock and Roll Express are old. But at least they, you know, they're old. They accept being old. Rob Van Dam just looked like old, but not old enough. Like, he's right at that age where it's like, you know, I'm too old to do the stuff I used to do, but I'm not so old that you're going to treat me like a legend. I'm just old.
Yeah, I kind of know that feeling at the current moment.
You and me both.
Oh man. So yeah, man. Yeah, Van Dam was a little bit tough.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm trying to think like who came off the best with the legend one. Besides Stone Cold, probably the women for the most part. Like Kelly didn't, like, she aged a damn day, but it's helped that she was super young when she started, so.
Yeah, and Candice Michelle still looked pretty good. Melina is still wrestling, so, I mean, she's keeping herself in shape, so that.
Eve looked fine. Yeah. It's funny where Maria's there, and it's like, she's part of that era, but it's like, she's been back long enough so it doesn't feel. It's weird that it's like, okay, yeah, she's part of the show. It's like, that's her class, like, you know, that era, and she's actually there. I was about to say stealing money, but no, it's like she's actually there with a job, so.
Yeah, I don't know, what do you, I mean, they are really running with that gimmick of her just shouting down Mike Kanellis at all turns.
Yeah, some of the writing staff is going through some breakup. It's gotta be something, because it's like, that just came out. I guess it's like we're paying them all this money. We need to use them somehow. But it's like, is y'all trying to turn Mike into like a school shooter? Like, enough. I'm sorry. I feel sorry for him. And I never liked Mike Bennett. And I never got the character. He just seemed like he was just a dude that was like a Maria's shadow. it didn't get any better in WWE. He's gotten in much better shape, so good for that. But just seeing her, like, you know, emasculate him week after week, is that whole, it just feels dirty.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't gotten any less awkward for me. Like, it's still just like, why are you doing this? Like, it doesn't really benefit anyone. Like, it makes it memorable and all, but he doesn't come off looking good. She doesn't come off looking good. I mean, I guess you might get booed, but I'm not even sure that that's something that's going to get you booed.
It's just like,
on a consistent basis.
It feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like, I like comedies that can get uncomfortable, but this isn't a comedy, and it's not funny.
No. Unless it's probably funny to Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you know, come to think of it, I guess I'm surprised that he did not come out with the Legends.
It's weird where it's like sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. And I think it's like they had so many names there. I think that was the biggest issue. It's just like it seemed like overkill. No, you got Austin, Austin, Hogan, and Flair. And then you got Shawn, you know, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Nash, and Hall. Like, and then it's like they, you know, the Bellas turned them down because I think one of them was out of town. Bret Hart turned them down. So it could have been a lot worse.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like, you know, cool to see Mark Henry again. You know, it's cool to see the Godfather. Although it's like, you're talking about the whole train. You can't see the whole trains in the whole train in 2019. So it's like, yeah, I won't complain about seeing Charlie Caruso dance, but it's not like we're not going to get what we used to get, the Attitude Era.
Yeah, it makes that gimmick pretty awkward these days. Especially when, and that's the one thing that always kind of surprises me, when people go along with the Ho train in the arena, I'm like, how is this still a thing? Like, I know we kind of broached the subject earlier, but like somehow some of these people know this stuff.
Yeah, Kevin Pimpin never goes out of style.
Oh, I guess not. And it's an international thing too. Cause I'll never forget when I saw one in Italy, and like he was in stereotypical fur coat and some type of bowler or something like that, with a feather in it. And I just shook my head. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Like, really? Like, you're dressed like that? Yeah, okay. And I just kept on my merry way. I figured I did not need any problems that evening. I was probably drunk enough as it was.
That was a wise move. But it's just, you know, it's just funny seeing, like, who constitutes a legend. Like, Santino's there. Okay. I mean, I guess is this gets to the point where it's just like, it's just overkill. Like, it's the same people you've seen before, and then people you see every now. Like, I don't, like, it's funny how important Mick Foley is in wrestling history, and then I'm at the point where if I never see him do a cheap pop or talk, I wouldn't feel bad.
Oh, yeah. I'm completely with you on that one. Like, I think he's been underrated bad with his promos. Like, I know that I've made fun of Hogan, and I mean, I'm trying to think of what Hogan fumbled at the end of his promo this time around, but Foley has just not been good the last few times around, and yeah, it's kind of gotten me to that point too, where it's just like, okay, I'm good without Mick around.
Yeah, it's just stuff. And then meanwhile, you having matches or you having storylines. Like, all of a sudden, Natalya and Becky are having this personal blood feud because they used to be friends. And Becky held Natalya back in Japan or whatever's going on. And, you know, sassy Natty that cusses and calls people bitches is my favorite Natalya, because it's like she just has this whole I'm the head of the homeowners association smile that everybody just goes on. Like, I pretend to be nice, but deep down I'm not. And then if you don't eat her apple pie, she may still want to call you a bitch. She That's might my favorite shit. Person of Natalya right there.
Yeah, I mean, she was always, to me, somewhat of a natural heel. Becky has brought out those tendencies with her talk. So I appreciate the situation. And it definitely freshens it up. Like, I'm sure that there's been a Becky Natalya feud along the way that might have been based on respect or some such shenanigans. But this is a nice way to make it a lot more fresh.
I don't think they've really crossed paths that much since they've opened in WWE. They've been on the same shows because they were both on SmackDown when they first had the draft. But that was basically like, you know, Nikki Bella, Natalya and Carmella were like having their stuff, and Becky was like feuding like Alexa Bliss, and then got the title and was feuding like Alexa Bliss and Mickie James, and then they went their separate ways. Yeah, it's like they've been around, but they never like really intertwined with each other, and it's just
and then of course
it's like, oh, why is that getting up main events? Like it's in Toronto, so. And Becky has no problem, like she said, I don't mind going to your home country and beating you in front of your family.
Even though they're still half a country away.
Yeah, so that's just, it's just curious, like, that's going on. And then I guess the last thing on Raw is kudos to R-Truth and Carmella for their career. I won't even say resurgence, because it's like, if you someone would have told me that Carmella would have outlasted Enzo and Cass by far, I would have been like, you gotta be kidding me. But there she is on Wild Out with R-Truth in 2019 with that 24/7 title. And like they've made that a thing. Like when they first got together, I wasn't too surprised because Carmella has the advantage, like having charisma, being friendly with everybody, and R-Truth is R-Truth. But right. They've been together for a while, and it's worked.
Yeah, it has been a pairing that I didn't really expect, but is over-delivered, if anything else. You know, I mean, because they even tried to kind of move them away from each other, and then they put them back together almost immediately.
Yeah.
And they still trust Carmella enough, because wasn't she on Raw? She wrestled on Raw, didn't she?
No, she was on Raw because she got involved at the in the 24/7 stuff in the beginning and at the end with Drake Maverick and his lovely wife. And I'm like, how did he marry her? I've talked about my friends in group chat and it's been talking about Twitter. I'm like, you know, people talk about outkicking their coverage. Boy. E. Ray got his coverage, I swear to God. Because, one, she's drop-dead gorgeous.
Right.
Two, the fact that in storyline, she's playing along with this whole, like, storyline-wise, yeah, we're about to get married. We haven't consummated our marriage because my doofus-ass husband keeps worrying about this belt. I'm going to go along with it and, like, you know, pretend that I'm the aggrieved wife just to get, you know, just to get the dupe on R-Truth. And then it ends with R-Truth tries to get the roll up. Carmella kicks Drake's hands like a WCW referee, gets the pin, jumps in a limo and takes his wife.
Right. I did like how Drake Maverick continues like, someone took off with my baby. And he has my wife, too. They are, yeah, this R-Truth Drake Maverick feud could be the feud of 2019, unbeknownst to anyone at the beginning of the year that this will at least crack the top five feuds in wrestling this year.
And it's worked. It's like they've, it was a stupid title that they made special because they went all in and embraced it. And it's something to be said about, you know, embracing gimmicks. And I'll be remiss to saying Bray Wyatt definitely embraced his when he got the choke out Mick Foley. And that did bring a smile to my face. So I almost forgot about bringing that up.
Yeah, I think Chris and I talked about that, you know, Bray Wyatt could use a freshen up for his move set. And stealing the mandible claw, quote unquote, from Mankind is slash Mick Foley is a good way to go with that.
Yeah, I would just say Tom Savini deserves all the money because that mask is creepy. It's creepy in picture and like creepy in movement. And it's like, you don't deserve, like, that's a lot of work that was done that, you know, more than necessarily needed. And I was thinking about that because I was watching tonight. And this Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt feud is hilarious because, you know, Finn's basically on his way out the door. And he's like, he's feuding with, like, we had this feud before. I used to be the monster. And then I guess you are. It's not going to change. And then Bray Wyatt's come out there like Mr. Rogers with CrossFit. With the puppets, and he's like, oh, we're big fans, me and the gang, and you know, you're an extraordinary man, but you're just a man. And then the voice starts changing and the vibe starts creeping out, and it's like that Brave Funhouse stuff I thought was the dumbest thing in the world when I first saw, but I love him now. It just grew on me.
Well, and I really like this because I was kind of unsure if they were going to bring that back, you know, because they had just, they kind of played a lot of those segments. Then he took like 3 weeks off for whatever reason. And then the last couple of weeks they've had him attack as the Fiend. And, you know, the next question was, are the Funhouse is going to come back? And yeah, I'm really glad that they have this weird personality thing going on for him, that in ring he'll be the Fiend, but he'll I hope he kind of always answers as Bray Wyatt
and he acknowledges the Funhouse. And the thing is, it's like he's not trying to present like, I don't know who this Fiend is, what are y'all talking about? Like, he acknowledges what's going on at this point. He's like, oh, you know, I don't think you really want this, but if you go ahead, I accept your challenge at SummerSlam. And I just laugh so hard at how ridiculous this is. But it's working because Bray, with goofy gimmicks, the ones that work is because the character embraces it. Like, I'm just going to go all in and take it 100%. Because if you're not feeling it, the fans know. And if you're not into it, why would the fans be into it?
Oh, right. Yeah, and he's embraced a couple of goofy gimmicks, and you know, he's making this one work. Like, it really is kind of an interesting reinvention of the Bray Wyatt character, because it's definitely along the same lines, but they are playing it much more schizophrenic.
Yes. So it's just, you know, like I said, I enjoy it. I know it's a good thing for Finn because he wants to have a sabbatical because he recently got engaged himself. He was one, oh, you know, Bray took some time off. It's called being a dad. I mean, you can't really acknowledge that on TV because it didn't happen. But I would say SmackDown did a better job acknowledging the stuff. I mean, they had it easier because they didn't have that many legends, so they got the one they use, they just got to use, like the stuff with Shawn Michaels and Dolph Ziggler. I got so much satisfaction at HBK calling Dolph Ziggler a second-rate HBK right in his face. Because even though they gave him too much credit, because he's more like a third-rate version. Like, to hell with Dolph Ziggler.
My alumni cousin there is taking a fall from the lofty spot that he was in, and
it should have been me. It was my turn, my chance. What about me? Like, shut up. Like, it's the point where everybody's telling him to stop whining.
Yeah, and he does need to stop whining.
when the Miz tells you that you're complaining too much, you're definitely complaining too much.
You know, if they're going to keep him around, it's one of those things that, you know, it's just like, this doesn't benefit anyone at this juncture. Just stop it, you know? Like, this is not rocket science. You can keep him on TV, but send his character in a different direction. Because, oof, woof.
Yeah, keep him around.
Just not good. I did like on SmackDown tonight, the lack of Corey Graves was refreshing.
No doubt.
And I don't know what it is, but I love part-time David Otunga. I don't know why this wasn't David Otunga all the time.
I mean, it was till he left to do a movie, and then Booker T filled in, and he never got his spot back.
I guess I didn't enjoy him until these couple of stints he's had back.
I mean, it's different because he has less. It's easier when you have less pressure in your part time. Like the same thing, like, you know, yesterday.
Oh.
Jerry Lawler sounded fine, and I can't remember the last time I said this. Like, you know, he talked like he still was the same Jerry Lawler, but like he talked about what was going on. His things he said made sense, and it was like, you know, I'll get my corny jokes in, but focus. Jerry Lawler was a very good commentator, but you hadn't said that in what? How many years? At least a decade?
Yeah, I was going to say, that might be in decade territory.
Yeah, so, like, I guess when the last time he was on SmackDown, when he was, who was it? When it was him and, I can't remember. It wasn't Cole. Cole was still on Raw. And it wasn't Grisham.
It's definitely before Todd Phillips then. Or Tom Phillips.
I don't know if Phillips was there yet.
Yeah, I would think not.
Yeah, like, could they split up him and I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole. But anyway, like I said, in short doses, you know, stuff like that works. You know, but it's just kind of like SmackDown. SmackDown has a way of, like, you know, when they're on, they're really on. Like, they have you hadn't seen Nakamura wrestle for the longest. He comes back to wrestle. He beats Finn for the belt. And now he just beats people clean. He beat Apollo Crews clean. Apollo looked good wrestling. And that was that.
And yeah.
That's like, SmackDown's perfect for, like, when they use you, they know how to use you. It's the whole using you part that's the issue.
Yeah. It really is a simple thing as usage. Like, because I did like, or I have liked that they've at least kept Mustafa Ali on TV. Because he does a good job of keeping his promos pretty fresh. And there are other places to record promos other than just backstage or behind a block wall.
You know, he makes him look real, you know, I'm sitting on the steps, I'm walking in the rain. It seems cheesy, but it works. And I like how they acknowledge, like, real life stuff. Like, you know, I had my chance. I got hurt. I'm not going to let y'all forget me. You know, which is basically what happened. It's like they're acknowledging real life stuff and incorporating a storyline. And then even Randy Orton is doing that. Like, the only reason you're here is because I hurt Mustafa Ali and you took his spot. But I need to talk about that whole Randy Orton Kingston thing. Because Randy Orton basically saying, you had to work hard, do all this gimmicks, and I got by because of white privilege. It's is insane and accurate on so many levels.
Yeah, I knew that we would get around to this one at some point too.
Because I killed your push, and you should be happy because you wasn't ready, and you ain't ready now. I'm like, I mean, it's the funny thing is, it's the truth, but they're not as a storyline.
At least the I killed your push part is true. I'm not sure if Kofi was ready for it or not at that point. He has certainly more than embraced it at this juncture. So I don't think that part is untrue. But I was just like, wow, they really went there. Like, I was pretty shocked that I was like, man, they're gonna take this thing head on, and it's not quite. I don't feel like it was vicious enough verbally to go SmackDown asshole brand edition, but it certainly was along those lines for sure.
I mean, yeah, because he was basically saying, you know, like, Kofi's like, I had my chance, I was going to be the main event after I beat your ass in Madison Square Garden, and then you use your backstage stroke to, you know, to take my spot and hold me down. And it took me almost a decade to get my chance again. And you thought I'd never be there, but I'm here. And it's like, yeah, Kofi's a hero. It's true. Then Randy saw it all like, did you say I used my stroke to kill your push backstage? You're damn right. You talk about your 11 years of working hard. I've been here 18 years. I've never had to work hard.
Yeah, and in fact, I believe that we've pretty much celebrated the fact that Randy Orton has about Brock Lesnar's schedule, but gets zero of the grief.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here to work smart. Like, you know, I didn't have to shake my ass, throw up pancakes, and have a fake Jamaican accent to get over. I'm just Randy Orton. It is sad because it's the truth. Like, if his name was Bob Smith, he'd be Mark Jindrak.
No. Oh man, I think things turned out a little too dark for Mark Jindrak. Or no, is that Sean O'Hare? That,
yes.
Oh, okay. Then we'll go with Jindrak. That sounds good.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, he's out there, and it's funny where it's kind of like the whole thing is, it puts, like, you know, is Kofi Kingston focused too much on getting respect and killing past demons? Like, he brought up a clip from 10 years ago. Is he worried too much about it? I'm like, no. Kofi Kingston out here killing all, you know, he's handling all his receipts. Like, taking care of all business. Like, I don't need to see him, you know, beat Dolph Ziggler a fourth straight time. I love Samoa Joe, but if they're not going to have a win, I don't want to see him in a title match. He's going to be like the Buffalo Bills at this point.
Oh, yeah. So,
and Randy Orton fits because, like, you know, Randy Orton is still a big deal. They definitely have past history, and it's like they have played that up, that history the two of them have had, similar to the one how they built up, like, Dolph Ziggler and Kofi having all those matches. Because when Kofi was on his journey, there was a lot of times they teased Randy Orton was going to be the one to kill it. Multiple times. It's always seemed like, oh, you know, Randy Orton is like that one anchor that's like was always there on his career.
Right. Yeah. It's because, well, was he in the Elimination Chamber match?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Because he has been hanging around the periphery of this story without really being involved in it yet. And, yeah, it's kind of the perfect, Kingston's kind of had the belt for a little while now, and especially now that Brock Lesnar beat Seth Rollins, that fear is off the table, I would say. And yeah, I mean, there wouldn't be a better way for him to cement his title run than a win over Randy Orton at this point.
Very true.
You know, I don't know how long he'll keep it, but if he beats Randy Orton and then kind of loses it in the next feud, like, I don't think he can really. This is still kind of, you know, one of the craziest title reigns just because of unexpectedness of it. Like, you could see the Daniel Bryan stuff kind of building for months and how that ended up shaking out. Kofi Kingston, that is still pretty crazy that, Orton takes out Ali, quote unquote. Or no, did he actually hit him?
Yeah, it's like somebody got injured, they gave him a chance, and the crowd just embraced him. Like, it, one night, that's all it took.
Yeah.
And then it was like, you know, it was like, oh, you know, it's just last, and they kept pushing it. It was like, the crowd kept getting behind it, and it's like, oh yeah, we forgot Kofi Kingston's great. And they treated him like that, and then you figure, like, he wouldn't, like, compare his title run and, like, Seth Rollins' title run. Kofi's still getting, like, big cheers. It's like the crowd's still behind Kofi and rooting for him because he just wins. Clean.
Oh.
You know, he has a match. He beats people. That's
it. I don't know how often I have said this recently, but because I know that it at least started with Ricochet and Aleister Black as a tag team. It's amazing what victories will do for you, even in the modern WWE when wins and losses, because even with Samoa Joe, it seems like he can always talk himself back into the situation, even though he is the Buffalo Bills at this point. Yeah, there are some ways to get your heat back, but not, well, you've got to be Samoa Joe to do that, pretty much.
Yeah, like, most of the time, it's like, and only Samoa Joe gets away with that because he has his reputation of, like, people know Samoa Joe is good, and the only reason why, you know, it's not, he doesn't have what he should have, it has nothing to do with skill or ability, it's just, like, you know, age, and they like what they like.
Oh, yeah, not too many of the heels get a good run with the title. It's somewhat limited in that department.
Yeah, if you're Brock Lesnar, you will. So.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, speaking of, you know, heels and that, the Kevin Owens stuff, that pivot to he's fat Canadian Stone Cold Steve Austin is just happened so fast.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I remember listening to him on Lillian Garcia's show, and he was talking about wanting another crack at being a babyface, and I'm like, man, they have really, really embraced this. And, well, it hasn't helped us get rid of Shane off of TV yet. I can only hope that maybe it leads to that at some juncture.
I certainly hope so.
But it seems to have worked so far, which is pretty surprising to me. Like, just because of the abruptness, that usually can blunt a change like this, especially since babyface, heel, and then running back within, what, he's only been back for 3 months? 5 months, maybe?
You know, like, he came back a little bit after WrestleMania. He basically took Big E's spot, was like a babyface for like 2 weeks, and then became a heel again, feuded with Kofi, then he's doing his stuff with Sami Zayn, and then all of a sudden, he's just a babyface out of the blue.
Yeah, it's a weird situation, but again, he seems to have embraced it, and it seems to be working. to me, for the most part. Like, the crowd reaction seems to be there for him, probably just because everyone is pretty tired of Shane at this point. Like, I think everyone kind of, I guess it's kind of funny. We talked about how he always put on these spectacle matches, but at this point, it's just like, if you have them at every pay-per-view, they can't keep being spectacle matches.
Yeah, I'm just at the point where I'm just sick of seeing Shane McMahon. And you guys, I'm like, if you have the wrestlers saying Shane McMahon's sucking up too much airtime and too many matches, you know, too many matches, you're getting too much, of course the fans are going to feel that way. Like, they know how we feel, and they're doing it anyway. And I'm like, it was cute when it was a babyface stuff, and then it was a little fine when he turned on The Miz. And you thought it'd be done by now. I was like, he beating Roman Reigns? I know he had help. It's like,
he beats him three times. Drew McIntyre and
Elias, basically, what's the point? You know, I know the original plan was they might have him beat, you know, win the title. Is that what you really want to do? Yeah, we're going to start, you know, we're going to have SmackDown on Fox with Shane McMahon as the champion. But don't worry about nepotism. We'll be fine.
This worked great for Eric Bischoff.
Oh, God. I'm just thinking, it's like, what's the end game of this? And, like, I'm watching tonight, and, you know, it's funny because it's like him and Roman Reigns are, like, the two biggest stars that don't have the title. And, of course, they have a match. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, they fight for no reason. Then they get jumped and they get laid out. And people complain, rightfully so. It's like, why are they fighting when they don't have to fight? And this one, they don't really fight. They just, you know, beat up the other guys.
Oh, when I saw that there was only 6 minutes left in the show, I knew that a match was not going to happen. I knew that there were going to be shenanigans in short order. I mean, because I did start to wonder, I'm trying to think of what the match was before that, but I'm like, why is this on TV right now? Like, I'm confused. I figured they'd tease out the torture in the main event with Reigns and Owens there longer than they did.
Yeah, and it's just funny to seeing, you know, they work together, the crowd behind Reigns, Owens doing the stunner, and that's just accepted. Like, of all the people to, like, you know, basically adopt that move, Kevin Owens being is the one that's like, I mean, I guess, because, like, it seemed like he gets a lot of respect from, like, that generation of wrestlers.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I believe he's been on Austin's podcast at some juncture, so.
And I know The Rock has spoken highly of him, too.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's just funny, like, you know, that's, you're wondering, like, you know, what are they going to do where it's like, Kofi's still over, he's your champ. It's like the top three stars on SmackDown all baby faces.
Oh.
And it's like, I guess they don't want to, you know, if you have Kevin Owens against Kofi, people want to cheer Kofi. And I assume they want to keep Kevin Owens as a babyface. I don't think they want any parts of having Roman Reigns against Kofi Kingston. If you want Roman Reigns to be like, beloved, they're going to forget all about that whole quote-unquote cancer thing with the quickness. If they have those two in the match, like, that will not... If they don't want to hear Roman Reigns get booed, they need to keep them separate too. And it is the point, like, Kofi's not going to have the belt forever. But who's, you know, unless it's Drew McIntyre, I don't see who's beating him on SmackDown.
Yeah, having that wild card rule and, oh man, does that get haphazardly applied these days? You know, it kind of gives you that opening, because I think McIntyre's technically on Raw, but they do, it does kind of help them shift some faces and heels in times of need, because I always felt like with the hard brand split that there were always these moments like that. where they just didn't have the right person to feud with someone. So it's kind of a smart rule, but it's been a little too liberally applied to make it a good rule at this point. So, yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see who Kofi does have up next, but I'm sure we'll get a little bit of mileage, I would
Yeah,
think,
I
out of
mean,
Randy
like you said, with the
Orton.
wild card rule, you can always swing somebody from Raw. But it's just like the whole brand split thing is just, I know if they had their way, they would keep it separate, but they don't serve just them as far as the masters, because I'm sure USA is concerned about ratings, and Fox will definitely be concerned about that. So it's kind of like you're paying all this money, you want to be able to use the stars you can use. And it says a lot. Like at first, it's like you notice who they thought were the stars, like Kofi Kingston be on both shows, and Becky Lynch should be on both shows. You know, when Ricochet and Aleister Black were tag team, still tag team on both shows. Now it's like, I don't know. Like a lot of times, like I don't remember who's like, is Ray or Raw or SmackDown Raw? Like I know he got traded to Raw, I guess. But it's like a lot of times you don't remember half the time. Like they'll have storylines on both shows. Like
Oh.
why am I seeing Miz TV on both shows and Shane on both shows?
Yeah.
Or Becky Lynch a feud with somebody on Raw and then somebody else on SmackDown. She was doing for a while until recently.
Well, that made a little more sense since she had two belts. But yeah, Shane does not need to be spanning shows, and I mean the guy still has three opponents out there. 'Cause I mean the Miz still has gotten zero revenge on him. What, he's lost like three straight matches to him?
Yeah, because they do a best, beat Elias, and then if you beat Drew, you get to Shane. He'll lose to Drew, or do a best 2 out of 3 falls, and then you beat Shane, you lose the third fall to Elias. And it's like, he hasn't even got a chance to, like, have Shane, because he's been losing to people before Shane. Like, and that's still there. And then, Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering why everyone thought that this was. Well, at least the announcers tried to sell it like it wasn't going to turn into what it turned into, which was a 3-on-2 assault. Like. It kind of seemed obvious from the start that even Owens and Reigns were kind of in on it and kind of played their own parts by bitching at each other. And of course, then they were smart enough to throw the first punch and attack Drew McIntyre.
Yes, which is smart because normally baby faces are stupid. So I'm glad to see a smart baby face. So, and a lot of times they don't let the baby faces be smart, so you're stuck with what you're stuck with. So I don't know if you follow Twitter, because this is like random. I was thinking about baby faces. Did you see the tweet? Well, Medusa slash Alundra Blaze put about Lacey Evans.
I read a couple of them. I didn't read all of them.
Like the one about you are failed, a
Failed
failed
Marine.
Marine, and you carry your child, your husband around the trailer behind you, and blah blah blah. I'm like, who pissed her Kool-Aid? Where did that come from?
Yeah, I don't know, because considering it like continued for like 4 to 6 long tweets. I'm like, wow. Because I think that Lacey responded to her, but it seemed like Lacey was very kind of storyline-y about the whole situation, and she just seemed pissed. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like
Like,
I'm not the
that's why you'll throw a good drop kick. Well, that's how your parents died. Like, huh? Like, you kind of escalated this that it wasn't necessarily called for.
Yeah, I thought that it was smart of Lacey Evans not to engage at that point. because
it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah,
and it's just funny how social media has become this thing where it's, you weaponize it either rightly or wrongly. It's just, I didn't see the point. Like, they're not gonna have a match. What's Lacey gonna do? Run her down? Like, it's, she doesn't get any benefits from that in that situation because she still works there. Lucy doesn't care. Like, she got her Hall of Fame ring. She never shows up again. Whatever. She still got it. It just seems like with her, I don't know. It's like, it's just funny with her career where it still seems like she just got some, I don't know, bitterness or resentment. Or it's like this whole, I don't care, I get to say what I want because I'm a legend.
Yeah, that's a hard one to go with. Just because, I mean, you kind of pointed out, like, she's not one that shows up all the time. You know, she's kind of on the unused side of legends. Because was it a couple of years ago that she got voted in?
Maybe like 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah. It wasn't that long ago. And I guess, A, I kind of missed out on her era of wrestling in the WWE. Because I remember her in WCW. But I know that there was a lot of time that I didn't see her wrestle, so...
She had good match. It's funny where, you know, WCW, like AWA back in the day, she's known for wrestling. WCW is more manager stuff, and WWE was more wrestling stuff, which normally is the other way around. Like, she had some real good matches in WWE, you know, when they focus on the women's title or that division. You know, it's one of those things where it's important, so it's not important anymore. I mean, it's kind of like, it's one of those dead eras where... she was a big deal in a time when being a big deal didn't matter because the stakes were less. Like, I call it the Diesel syndrome. It ain't Diesel's fault he was champ during the down period. Like, he was champ. Sometimes it, you know, sometimes it happens. Sometimes you're MVP on a tour. Sometimes you're defensive player of the year on a 2-14 team, like Cortez Kennedy. And that was kind of like Medusa in WWF. She's the women's champion in a time where women's wrestling wasn't a big deal in America like that.
Yeah. Yeah, she was in a tougher spot even than the Candice Michelles of the world.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. She never had to have a put-in match. And I guess there's something to be said about that. I guess we can wrap up soon. That whole, because they brought up the whole, Stone Cold brought up, like, you know, I come back because we're all a family at the end of the day. Different areas, we're still trying to do the same thing. And it's camaraderie. And you can see it to a certain extent because, like, you know, everybody's, they all want, you know, the same thing. I want to be famous. I like being with my peers and stuff. But I wonder how much animosity it is where the old heads are telling them, like, you know, why can't you be like me and cut real promos and do this? And they're like, because they don't let us. And it's kind of like they don't, it's irony where they make a big deal about how important Stone Cold Steve Austin is, and they do everything in their power to make sure they never have a Stone Cold Steve Austin again.
It's one thing to kind of guide the storylines. It's another thing to have trust in at least some people. You know, some people just aren't good at the promos. I can understand needing writers for them. Other people, like Austin, are definitely more naturals.
Yeah, like, if something came out like Kevin Owens, they just give him bullet points, they let him cut his promos, because they trust him. And it's like, the people who can talk, let them talk. Let them talk like normal people. Like, you know, maximize what you have. Your Japanese wrestlers and Latin wrestlers where English is their first language, have them cut backstage promos and have subtitles. That shit, UFC does it all the time. It works. No, have them cut. And Jeremy got mad at me because I ruined movies for him because I told him. No, because it's related to wrestling. We were watching The Great Wall. And he was like, this Chinese actress, I don't think she's all that good. I'm like, it's not that she's not good. It's that she's acting in a language that's not hers. So she's doing extra stuff that she... charisma is missing where you're focused on your words. You just can't be yourself. Pay attention to everybody where English is not their first language. See how they act. And then you notice that. A week later, he came to me like, he got mad, like, you ruined all these movies for me because I used to never notice it until I noticed it, and now I can't not notice it.
Well, you know, I've kind of said it for a while, and I think Andrade for the Men is an example, and, Asuka on the women's side. Both of them, when they cut promos in Spanish and or Japanese, I love it, like, every time, because you can tell that their conviction is there. Like, they just trust it more than, obviously, speaking it in a second language. And, like you said, like, doing something like the subtitles would really help out a lot. And I don't know why they just don't even have a translator at points. Like, I mean, how long have there been translators in baseball, for Pete's sakes, for similar situations here? And they
it's just
don't
a thing
do anything
where,
like that.
You know, I noticed Io Shirai's promo, she cut in Japanese, and they had somebody do the subtitles, like, shit, it sounded awesome. She got a point across. You can feel the passion, stuff like that. And English is different. It's not that she's a bad talker. It's just she's focusing on saying the right words and saying it slow, that it almost feels like you're watching an old kung fu movie. And that's still a thing. It's like, just, I know why, because it's like, you know, Americans want to hear English. They want to read subtitles. I'm like, New Japan does it. Movies do it. You know, Game of Thrones has subtitles. And they were speaking made up languages. So, if they can do it, WWE can do it. You know, have them talk backstage, have them cut those inset promos, have a subtitle, and I bet you they get over a lot more than them struggling to like get their point across. And keep in mind, not only are they cutting promos in a different language, they're cutting these written promos that's all meandering anyway. You know how hard that probably has to be.
I don't really want to do that. I definitely could not. My German is definitely rusty enough at this point that I could not cut a promo in German. I probably could have in years past. So, I don't need to try and relearn a language at this point and try to cut a promo in it.
Yeah, and they try to have them do it, and they all, and there's like wondering, like, you know, because you could tell, like, Andrade, like, you could tell why he was a big deal. He has charisma, like, even he's getting better in his English and everything like that. Like, you know how charismatic he can be. You can tell, like, he didn't get Charlotte by accident.
I would imagine that this is true. I'd have to ask Charlotte to be sure, but, you know, it checks out. the native language thing would definitely help them out, and it's not hard to, you know, it's one of those things that it's kind of just sitting in front of them and they're not doing it for whatever reason. Well, I mean, it always goes back to Vince McMahon, I suppose. So
yeah, basically,
you can drop that
doubt,
one down.
When in doubt, blame Vince instead of the crowd, this smart-ass crowd saying, thank you, Vince. They talk all that trash online about how WWE writing sucks and Vince out of touch. As soon as he shows up, oh, thanks, Dad. Are we going scuba diving? It's like a weekend stepdad. Like, they can't help themselves.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad I haven't been there for one of those awkward moments where I just sit there on my hands and do nothing. Because that's all I'd do. But, I guess, is there anything else to get to?
No, that's just about it. Like, you know,
mosey on out of here.
Yeah, wrestling, like WWE's, in a weird place where they're still trying to figure out their footing as they get ready to move to new networks and deal with competition from a rival. And it's like, they've had more talent than they ever probably had in their history, and they still struggle on how to use it.
Yeah, that part is pretty awkward, honestly, that they have no idea how to use it.
Yeah, like, or, is Rusev injured?
That's a good question.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, that's a perfect example. It wasn't too long ago, Rusev Day get a title shot. He got himself over his own way, and now Aiden English is a commentator. Rusev is in, witness protection, and Lana's busy getting in trouble tweeting.
Yep. I don't know. It seemed like things fell apart for them when they got married. It seemed like that was not well received in the front office, in my opinion, for whatever reason.
WWE hates relationships.
Until they
girlfriend, down. Girlfriend, boyfriend, marriage, and even like this whole Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins thing. Of course, I don't mind them together. They love each other, whatever that works. This whole we're gonna shove it down your throat thing, like I've never seen this before. And it's just a weird dynamic where it's yes, they're babyfaces that together. We make jokes about how babyfaces actually have sex. Contrary to what WWE and Marvel Universe says, yet this one is just like so obnoxious, and they know it is, and they still make fun of it. It's like, yeah, y'all think we'll have chemistry. I'm mad if you see us in the bedroom. It's like, no, I don't want to imagine that, Seth. No, like, that's your business, Becky. And then you have a storyline of things. Is Becky Lynch being selfish, distracting Seth Rollins? Is Seth Rollins a real man? Because they basically tell him, why don't you go put an apron on and make a sandwich for the man? Like, Seth Rollins is your world champion. What? Like, that whole... Part of me was almost relieved that Brock Lesnar won that title because they were just treating Seth Rollins like a chump.
Yeah, I don't know why he was, and then they'll sit there and go, why didn't he get over? You made him look like a chump the whole time?
Yeah, like you had Baron Corbin go out there and basically tell him, like, put an apron on and do the dishes. Like, who's Baron Corbin to tell anybody anything? And then I will say this. I didn't talk to you about the pay-per-view. When he hit the end of days on Becky Lynch, I was like, yeah, Seth is justified in shooting him. Just because it was so... You hadn't seen that in such a long time. So it was just so unexpected because you weren't used to, like, they had it. Even when they start bringing, like, mixed tag matches back from, the Facebook challenge they had, mixed match challenge, the men and women never, like, fought each other. They just, like, had matches and interacted. And it was still, like, you didn't have men hitting women. And he hit her with a finishing move. And, like, I saw that half and I was watching, like, yeah, Seth is justified whatever happens after this. And he beat the brakes off Baron Corbin, only to lose the belt to Brock. And then, what that idiot Vince Russo says, if Becky would have turned on him, we could have printed money. Why? You hate love?
That is one that I don't know if it's Eric that set up us to follow him. I'm like, I'm done. This guy's a fucking idiot. I've got to admit, I don't do the mute or the block or the unfollow too often. But that was one where it's just like, man, this is just even too much for me. Like, because I feel like, was he on Steve Austin's podcast a couple of times early on?
I don't remember, but I'm like, how did he ever, he used to be considered a genius. Is the bar in professional wrestling that low? Or was it just, he was just actually was like good with a good editor, and he just never grew? Because I'm like, he's just abhorrent. He just comes off as a horrible human being.
Yeah, I think he just had a good editor. I'm gonna throw that out there. Like that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. Because
Michael Bay.
it that and I mean, I feel like you've probably watched more of it than I have. I have not gone back to watch some of that Attitude Era stuff, and I feel like a lot of people in our group have gone back to watching it. It's like, ooh man, this stuff does not hold up all that well.
It was cool when you were in high school and college. When you have a 401k or you're paying property tax, that shit is not cool. Like, it does not. It's funny where it doesn't age well. And it was just messy and like, oh, everybody's over. Nothing meant anything. And it's this whole, it's like anything where it's like old music. You remember the best stuff? Oh, you know, music was good back then. It's like, no, they play the good songs over and over again. They don't play the bad ones. So you just focus. So yeah, you think it's the same thing. The Attitude Era. Yeah, you remember Austin and The Rock and Triple H and Undertaker. I don't need to see a 2 minute Crash Holly match, and it was way more 2 minute Crash Holly matches than like awesome Austin matches on Raw. So it's like this dirty secret where Stone Cold became Stone Cold and stopped wrestling on TV. We don't
Oh.
talk about it, but I'm like, I can't remember like how I could count on one hand when Stone Cold Steve Austin won the title for the first time, how many TV matches he had on Raw.
Yeah, he definitely was a precursor to the Randy Orton model.
Yeah, like, you know, but you see him all the time, and it's like you see him talking, you see some of the skits, like, I guess we wrap it up. Imagine if you were watching Raw SmackDown. And they had Charlotte Flair barking like a dog, like they had Trish Stratus. And you watch it with your friends. I cannot say, that's one of the few times, like, I understand wrestling's ridiculous. There's few things that can happen that, like, embarrass me in front of watching in front of other people. And that's one that I remember, like, this is like, I remember he got a lot of flack too. I'm like, no one told Vince, like, maybe we shouldn't do this.
I always figure that Vince has heard this at some point. I'm like, someone had to have said this at some point, right? Like, that's always my thought when that happens. Like, this had to have happened somewhere along the line, right?
We're gonna have our most beautiful woman, you know, one of our sex symbols. And we gonna just degrade the crap out of her, like the bark like a dog, the push her face and like the that bucket and all. Like, I'm surprised Trish Stratus didn't sue. They're like, what? I'm just thinking about some of the stuff they've done, and it's, you know, the real dirty secret. People focus on the Attitude Era. The post Attitude Era was way worse. Hot lesbian action. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Kelly, exhibitionist. I'm only 17. I like taking my clothes off. With my boyfriend, Balls Mahoney, and my ex-boyfriend, Mike Knox, the woman beater. Yeah. Snitsky kicking the. Like, I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole. I just think of some of the stuff that's going on. The casual racism shown to Booker T and Shelton Benjamin, like. Yeah, I will never complain too much about WWE now because I know how worse it used to be.
Yeah, it certainly has gotten better. It's not perfect, but it's better.
Yeah, I just imagine, like, you know, people complain about Randy Orton now. He basically called Shelton Benjamin uppity, talking about people like you don't deserve chances. And yeah, I'm like, that was a thing. Like, and the one I always go to, Batista was the babyface heavyweight champion, and he basically sexually coerced and assaulted Melina to get a tag team title match with Rey Mysterio. And he got cheered for it. Yeah, think about if that happened now. Like, if you know, I'm just trying to use an example. Seth Rollins was like, yeah, you know, if you have sex with me, I won't challenge, you know, I'll give Baron Corbin a title shot. And then he does, like, nah, I'm playing. And Michael Cole laughs about it. Renee just shakes her head like, that's why you gotta sign the contract. And then Corey Graves is indignant.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I'd be writing a column and or doing a podcast if that was the subject matter. I think I would have found something else to fill my time with.
Yeah, I can't believe I used to watch all that and, like, be, you know, like the Dawn Marie, Tori Wilson stuff. I'm like, all that stuff happened. And we just watched it. And we didn't say, like, you know, Stephanie McMahon, Miss Female Empowerment, by SmackDown comes on one time, and all I see is her bending over, showing ass to my, oh, I thought you were expecting to see Tori Wilson. You know, I'm not an all-American girl like her, but I embrace my curves, and I believe in equality. I'm like, this is, what? Vince got his daughter bending over, showing her ass as a blessing in female empowerment as the SmackDown GM, and she's the baby face. And yeah, John Cena, you a real man. Why don't you smack my ass? Show me how much man you really are. Yeah. See, this is your fault. You had me reminiscing about all these bad things that happened on Raw and SmackDown. And now my mind is remembering this stuff, and I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna go to sleep upset.
Well, I apologize for that, but I am also not the one that has rewatched that garbage and just plow through the present garbage.
You're smart. So the only garbage I miss, and I wish it would have happened, is that Undertaker could have dragged Hulk Hogan one more time with his bike.
Oh. Ah, oh, it made me think about one of my favorite moments, and I don't feel like I've seen it in recently, is the coffin Big Show drag by yes, Big Boss Man. Thinking,
like, that's one of the few times you would cheer. Like, Undertaker basically committed a hate crime, and I would cheer for it if he did that again. Because fuck Hulk Hogan.
Well, that sounds like a pretty solid place to leave off. I will mention that Cellar Dweller, Mary Morrow, New England IPA was what I enjoyed during the show. They are out of kind of close to Cincinnati. They have a winery, which is they're part of Valley Vineyards. They have good wine and good beer. It's a good place to visit. And if you find their beer, have at it. I know you will never have at it, but that is a whole different thing. And yeah, at Stunt Granny, at DeFrango 11, at Shaw Farm D, or Philly Drugs, whichever one it actually is at this point. And I'll let you send it out here, sir.
For Kevin DeFranco, I'm Shahid Abdul-Hadi, and the immortal words of Iron Sheik, go fuck yourself, Hulk Hogan. We are out.